I don't need any reminding of what episode this is.
I'm so ready.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. There's a pause there.
Welcome to episode 169. Okay. I forgot what came next. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 169.
69!
Of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Lind.
And I am Kayla Moria.
And we are a paranormal podcast.
Yes, we are.
Kayla.
Brittany.
The time is here.
It is here. It is more than here. It is now. It is. I don't know what would be more than here. I didn't think about that before.
The time is now. It is so evidently occurring in this moment.
I have a structured settlement and I need cash now.
Yeah.
Call J.G. Wentworth. 877 cash now. But yes, it's episode 169. And now we won't encounter this for another 100 episodes if we're still doing it that long.
You know, we said that with episode 69. So I assume we're going to keep on going.
Well, there you go. That's very true. Unless we run out of spooky locations, we're here.
Or one of us dies.
That's true. You never know what's going to happen. And if I die, I'm going to haunt you.
Good. Then we can still do the podcast.
Oh, geez. Brittany.
Yes.
I'm going to ask first this week. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
I am glad to hear that.
Yeah. I'm really tired, but I think it's just my body like saving up its energy for homegrown.
Cause it's homegrown time.
Yeah, this is coming out on Wednesday of homegrown, but we're recording this on the Friday before. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's it. I'm just saving up that energy.
Today is the first day of my vacation. I took a week off for homegrown this year.
Fuck yeah, you did. Yeah. That's awesome. Look at the gleam in your eye.
And
you're so excited.
And this week was like, yeah, we're going to make sure that you are earning that week off of vacation. So.
Ah, so you're like, yeah.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So happy homegrown, everybody.
Happy homegrown.
Congratulations to Lydia and Alex. They were the winners of our week-long festival pass, in case you did not see that on our social media.
Welcome to the party, pals.
Welcome to the party. If you are listening to this on Wednesday morning, I hope to see y'all out for Western Wednesday in West Duluth.
Are you dressing up?
You know it. I got a t-shirt that has a picture of Alan Jackson in an inner tube.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And it says hotter than a hoochie coochie.
Way down yonder on the
Chattahoochee, never knew how much that muddy water meant to me. Yep, I'm prepared. Are you going to dress up for any of the themes this week?
I honestly have not looked.
All right.
And I'm not sure if I will.
Well, I hope you do.
Okay.
Oh.
Jokes.
Honestly, it's been a month. I forget how to do this without a third voice here.
I know. You're like, what comes next?
What's next? Okay. Why did the witch give up fortune telling?
I don't know.
She saw no future in it. What happened to the witch who was naughty at school?
I no idea.
She was expelled.
Okay. I liked Chad's response to the first joke last week, and he's like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Why are we doing this? I'm already regretting my decision to be on the podcast.
I don't know. I thought that went very well.
I think we redeemed ourselves later on.
Exactly.
And he made that kick-ass song.
Yep.
If you did not listen to the end, go to the end.
Yeah. If you didn't listen past, was it past our credits?
No, it was before the credits.
Okay. So listen past the okay bye. If you're the person that realizes we're wrapping it up and stops listening, just go back and finish listening.
Chad made us a song.
It's worth it. 100%. We were both very excited when we heard it.
Yeah, I was worried people wouldn't listen if it was past the credits, so I put them beforehand.
Smart. Shall we?
Let's crack into it.
This is really going to... I'm drinking a Hams today. Mm-hmm. This is really going to prep me for homegrown. Because, you know, cheap beer. You can't go out all 8 nights if you're drinking the expensive stuff.
Yeah, I don't like cheap beer. It makes me sick.
Yeah, don't do that then.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my wallet is going to have to stand up for my body, which will fall apart.
It's my emotional support wallet. Wait, my physical support wallet?
Both.
All right, y'all. Episode
169.
As you know, I love the number 69. I think it's hilarious because I have the maturity of a 12-year-old. So for episode 69, if you do not recall, I covered spectrophilia, also known as ghost sex. So for episode 169, I wanted to find something sex related as well. So this week I will be telling you about incubus and succubus.
Incubi and succubi?
Well, yeah, but I had to say incubus and succubus first.
Oh, okay. I was like, yeah, but you implied that it was the plural.
I know.
Anyway, sorry, I'm excited. Tell me all about about the sex demons.
So for something I feel like I need to get out in the open right off the bat, my targeted ads may be very interesting from now on, because between covering the exorcism of Roland Doe and now all this looking into incubi and succubi, I started receiving sponsored ads on Google.
Mm-hmm.
This one popped up for incubus and succubus removal by powerfulexorcist.com. Description reads, exorcism rituals for a house. Get rid of demonic oppression, ghost possession, negative spirits, blockages, bad curses. The top-notch exorcism and deliverance priest is here. Prayers, rituals, rites, and mantra. Contact now. Services, cast out evil spirits, cast out ghost/spirit, cast out devil/ghosts. Evil spirit removal, get rid of demons, demonic spirit removal, trust exorcist rituals.
Okay, first of all, that is amazing.
I mean, of all the times for targeted ads to just be spot on.
Second of all, I mentioned targeted ads at the beginning of my thing as well, which is
me and
just,
you.
I know, right, we just here. Keep like the, with the Maury Povich thing. It's just like, what?
So yeah, incubi and succubi, the plural of incubus and succubus, are demon spirits that have sex with mortals. The male demon is said to have intercourse with women, is the incubus, and female demon who seduces men is a succubus. And from all the mythology I can find, these demons are pretty much straight.
Oh.
I found no cases of incubus on men action or succubus on women action.
Well, that seems a little homophobic. Of all of the incubi and succubi that has ever existed?
Well, that's just what I could find. Mm. You know. Also, I'm going to quickly get sick of having to say incubus and succubus when I'm talking about both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to come up with a name that encompasses them both. So they are now Bibus now.
I thought you were going to call them buses.
No, Bibus. Bibus.
Okay.
Which implies it's like a bus that transports bisexuals, but I'm still here for it.
Oh, the Bibus. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Where are you heading? Oh, I'm heading on the Bibus. You can't come. You're straight. You can't come. You're gay.
Which is interesting because they are not gay.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Weird. Well, we're just going to take it and Bibus.
Yep. So Bibus are generally believed to appear most frequently during sleep or in nightmares. The concept may have arisen from the idea of gods and demons interacting with humans, which was a big theme in pagan times.
Mm-hmm.
Think like familiars, like they're saying that this is the same kind of idea, a supernatural entity coming by and choosing to associate themselves with specific humans.
Okay. I mean, in Greek mythology as well, it's just gods are having all sorts of sex with mortals.
Yep. Like many mythological villains now used in many of the smutty-ass books I read, incubi, succubi, bibus, they have been glamorized in recent decades.
Mm-hmm.
Today, in most stories, they appear as the peak of conventional beauty. Young, with glowing skin, perfectly etched muscles and curves, powerful wings, long, suggestive tails.
Mm.
If they're succubi, they're typically portrayed as being all big and chesty and covered in strategically placed leather pieces of fabric. You know? But in the past, these nocturnal demons were far from attractive. The original Bibus were small creatures with faces like gargoyles or monkeys.
Mm.
They usually had dark, scaly skin or fur, claws, horns, and bat-like wings. Bat-like wings are not necessarily a turnoff. If you read the ACOTAR series, just throwing that out there. When they weren't flying through the dead of night, they crawled, climbed, and sat in hunched positions. Unsurprisingly, in most stories, they also had exaggerated genitals.
Mm, yeah. Wait. I wonder what the succubi exaggerated genitals would be.
I can picture a few things.
Okay. Okay. I was debating, like, do I ask or do I just leave it? Do I ask you off mic? Like, what?
We could talk about it off mic. Off mic. There are, I mean, we get into some stuff here, but I don't know that we need to get that in depth.
No, we are not a succubus-centered smutty podcast.
No, but we could be.
I mean.
that's like the offshoot. The spinoff is just a podcast where I talk about demon genitals.
Well, I hope you would, like, describe, like scenes.
Nope, it would just be genitals.
It's just informational. It's not sexy, just informational.
So these demons are famous for their insatiable lust. They are so sex-crazed that their human partners can literally die of exhaustion after too many midnight fuckfests.
Jesus.
They also have a tendency to be violent. In many stories, victims are describing the demons as sitting on their chest, covering their mouths so they can't breathe while all of this is happening. When the Bibus arrive to have their way with human victims, it is said that they take precautions to prevent them from interfering. So it is not
consensual.
A Bibus might put their victim in a trance so that they're unable to wake up, or paralyze them so completely that they can't even cry out for help.
We should probably do a little bit of a content warning here.
I do not describe anything, any particular scenes or anything in any graphic detail.
Okay, good.
The most I do is at some points I mention that it's not consensual.
Okay.
So, perhaps the most famous seductress of all time, Lilith, is known sometimes as the mother of all succubi. She appears in Sumerian, Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Judaic, and Christian mythology. So she's all over the place. Lilith first appeared in Sumerian culture as a goddess of fertility and witchcraft. Later, the Assyrians and the Babylonians associated her with dark demons. The Greeks gave Lilith an extensive backstory, and she was a beautiful woman who Hera transformed into a monster after her beauty attracted Zeus's roving eye, because Zeus was a fuckboy. In her new monstrous form, Lilith, I believe they called her Lamia in Greek mythology, roamed the world, seducing men and eating babies. And isn't that the dream?
See, I see all of these things as just men writing
absolutely.
A story about a strong woman.
Absolutely. It's like back in the day when, like, currently if you read any sort of, like, romance written by a man, it is very typically, and her boobs bounced boobily as she, like, it's very just, like,
Do you follow the yes. girl on TikTok?
Yes, I love her so much.
Oh my God.
There's this TikToker, and I cannot recall her username right now.
Right.
But she describes.
Or she reads.
She reads these passages from books and then like has a spray bottle for when she needs to say no. So like she'll say something, roll her eyes, and then spray the bottle at the screen and be like, nope.
It's all about men writing women and the absolute nonsense.
Yep. Especially love it when they describe something that's physically impossible and she's just like, that's not how it works. No.
That's not how it works. Spray bottle.
So if you're looking at an incubus situation, during the encounter, they might try to impregnate the woman. According to some sources, the incubus itself is incapable of reproducing, so it uses sperm collected from a human male. And if the woman gives birth to a child, it will be called a cambion, which is a human with some magical or demonic abilities.
How do they get the human?
Yep, I'm getting there.
Okay.
I'm getting there. I even saw in one of my sources, and of course it was one of those things where I was researching this over a series of days.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got back on, I didn't save the link and I couldn't find it.
Ah, I hate that.
But I remember reading it, that in one of my sources, it said that in some versions of the origin story of Merlin, that he is the child of an incubus. And that's where he gets his magical powers from.
Interesting.
This is where many legends claim that incubus and succubus are actually the same creature. So a bibus is just an incubus and a succubus.
Oh, okay.
Some legends claim that the incubus is able to change, so it appears as a succubus to attack human men and collect their sperm, and then it changes back into a male shape to attack and impregnate human women.
Hmm.
Again, this is all very, very, very old mythology with a bunch of different source materials. So
right.
Different cultures have changed and adapted things to fit what they want it to fit or to do whatever message they need to put out there.
I mean, in all fairness, there are animals who can indeed change their sex depending on what is required of them at that time period. So yep. I'm not doubting the fact that were these beings to be real, that they could do that.
Belief in bibus goes all the way back to ancient times, but it was incorporated into Christian belief during the medieval period. Such churchmen as Thomas Aquinas, who was a famous Italian priest, philosopher, and theologian, and he was alive from 1225 to 1274, so that's how far back that is.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Aquinas discussed these demons.
Oh.
Cultures all over the world have had sexually driven demons. Just a quick cursory search will tell you of a few. Some of the first ones I could find were native Amazonian people believe in Boto, a pink river dolphin that turns into a male sex maniac at night.
I mean, dolphins have been known to sexually assault a lot of different creatures.
Yeah. Dolphins are dicks.
Dolphins are dicks.
Chilean people believe in the Trauco, from what I can tell is a kind of fae who seduces young virgins. If we hearken back to episode 90, you may recall Swedish people tell stories of a nocturnal horse which rides on its victim's chest at night while their Germanic neighbors fear the Alp who sits on young women.
I don't remember this thing about a horse, but...
I touched on it. It was mostly centered on Alp or Alpin.
Oh, okay.
But the horse part came up as part of it.
Gotta go re-listen to episode 90.
And according to the encyclopedia, old rabbinical writings have a legend of how Adam was visited during a 130-year period by female demons, and he had intercourse with demons, spirits, specters, lemurs, and phantoms. Yeah.
Wait, like Adam and Eve, Adam?
Yeah. I thought you were giving me that look because I said lemurs. Yeah, because I said lemurs. I was picturing like... the lemur from Zaboomafoo.
That's what I was picturing.
As for why it included lemurs amongst the demons and phantoms, I do not know. And if somebody knows the story behind this, please tell me.
Yeah, what's up with the lemurs?
Why are lemurs in the mix with spirits, specters, and phantoms? I did look. I didn't look long. I only looked for like 2 hours, but I could not find anything.
Only 2 hours.
All right. But anyway, another legend relates how under the reign of Roger, King of Sicily.
Wait. I'm not done yet. I'm sorry. He has sex with specters and ghosts and fucking lemurs, and it's just fine. But Eve eats a motherfucking apple, and we're like the cause of all sin.
Well, I mean, I didn't read the writings of it. I had a source that referenced it. I didn't read the writings itself. They were saying during a 130-year period by demons, so that may not have been consensual.
Still, an apple. She ate an apple.
No, this is not a debate about whether or not the writing of Eve eating the fruit is, like, we're not debating that. I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm just saying in this situation, I'm not saying that Adam is the villain in that situation.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. Sorry. I wasn't ready to move on. I think I'm ready to move on, though.
So, yes, that was just an example of how many different cultures have brought Bibas-like creatures into the storytelling.
Have you heard the song on TikTok, the crazy how the very first sin is a woman who ate? A woman who ate.
No, I haven't heard that one.
What? Okay, it's a song. It's called Mother, and you need to look it up.
Okay. Another legend relates how, under the reign of Roger, King of Sicily, a young man was bathing by moonlight. He thought he saw someone drowning and hastened to the rescue. Having drawn from the water a beautiful woman, he began enamored with her, married her, and had her a child.
Oh, shit.
Afterwards, she disappeared with her child, which made everyone believe that she was a succubus using him to
reproduce.
Yep. Scottish historian Hector Boyce, who lived from 1465 to 1536, wrote of a handsome young man who was pursued by a female demon who supposedly would pass through his closed door and offer to marry him. He complained about this to his bishop, who instructed him to fast, pray, and confess his sins. And I guess it worked, because the female demon stopped visiting him. And it's just sounding an awful lot like a commercial for a Catholic church, but, you know.
Right. You just got to pray a little bit more. You pray those sexy demons away.
In the description of Scotland, of Hector Boethus, as translated in the first volume of Holinshed's Chronicles from 1577, they have several notable examples of demons, and one of them specifically discusses an incubus and says, quote, and I'm going to take a moment here because it's in, even with my, like, attempts at formatting, I know I'm going to have a difficult time reading this. In the year 1480, it chanced as a Scottish ship departed out of the Forth towards Flanders. There arose a wonderful great tempest of wind and weather, so outrageous that the master of the ship with the other mariners wondered not a little what the matter meant. To see such weather at that time of year, for it was about the middle of summer. At length, when the furious rage of wind and still increased, in such wise that all those within the ship looked for present death, there was a woman underneath the hatches that called unto them above and willed them to throw her into the sea, that all the residue by God's grace might yet be saved. And thereupon told them how she had been haunted a long time with a spirit daily coming into her in a man's likeness. In the ship there chanced also to be a priest, who by the master's appointment, going down to this woman and finding her like a most wretched and desperate person, lamenting her great misfortune and miserable estate, used such wholesome admonition and comfortable advertisements, willing her to repent and hope for mercy at the hands of God, that at length she seemed right penitent for her grievous offenses committed, and fetching sundry signs even from the bottom of her heart, being witness as such should appear of the same, there issued forth the pump of the ship, a foul and evil-favored black cloud with a mighty terrible noise, flame, smoke, and stink, which presently fell into the sea. And suddenly, thereupon the tempest ceased, and the ship passed in a great quiet, the residue of her journey, arrived safely at the place whither she was bound. So that's a lot of words to say.
Can I attempt to decipher it?
Yes.
All right, so it was summer, And there was this big ass storm. And they're like, dude, this is really like a fall situation. I don't understand why it's so fucking windy when it's summertime. And then this woman was hanging out below deck. And she's like, guys, I bet if you just threw me overboard, we'd all live, or you would all live, like sacrifice me to the sea. And they're like, what? And she's like, no, seriously, man, there's this like fucking demon who keeps attacking me all the time. And I'd rather just die, like just kill me. And then this priest was like, you are a dirty, dirty girl because you're a woman. And even though you did not consent to any of this, it's still your fault. You better fucking repent. And then they threw her into the sea, and the demon thing, as like a big cloud of black smoke, was like, oh, I'm melting. And then they made it to shore because they sacrificed the woman who was really just being attacked.
You are close, but they did not sacrifice the woman.
Oh, okay.
So basically, because the priest and the ship spoke to her and begged her to repent, and she did, and it went well, because after she repented and found everything at the bottom of her heart, a big black cloud filled with noise and fire and smoke and stink came out and fell into the sea, and that was the demon being exorcised.
And that was the sacrifice.
And the storm calmed down, and the ship made it to port safely.
I was really, really close.
But you were very close. I'm not even going to read the rest of the stuff I had written out, because you nailed it with... but with a lot more fun descriptors than I had.
Fuck put. Yeah. I'm not usually very good at old English, but that was easy. Men blamed a woman for something she didn't do, and she had to repent. And apparently that saved the day, because women are always saving the day. That is the moral of the story.
In another case related by the same author, an incubus did not depart as easily as the last one did. In the chamber of a woman who was the daughter of a nobleman in the country of Mar, there was found a foul, monstrous thing, very horrible to behold. For the love of this foul, monstrous thing, the lady refused wealthy marriages because she was into it. And a priest who was in the company began to repeat St. John's gospel, and suddenly, the wicked spirit, making a very sore and terrible roaring noise, flew his ways, taking the roof off the chamber away with him, the hangings and coverings of the bed being also burnt there within. Which...
so he Kool-Aid manned through the ceiling?
Yeah, I think it means it was some sort of exorcism, and the bed got all burnt up.
Well, they used to have canopies.
But I couldn't find out if the woman survived or not, because there's not many available sources I could find to translate a random story from the 1400s.
What? The internet let you down on that one?
Let me down.
Aw, I'm sorry.
And in another story, Margaret Bremont, in the company of her mother and others, was in the habit of attending diabolic trysts, which is my new favorite way of saying sex. Hey, babe, you want to have a diabolic tryst later? Anyway, diabolic trysts with incubi. She and the others were burned alive by Adrian Furious, who was the general vicar of the Inquisition.
Oh. Well, women are just not getting a good deal in these stories.
So, this is all very old stuff. Like, time has advanced all of these things. So as far as explanations outside of the supernatural, I got to turn to some of my favorite kinds of sources.
Smutty books?
Scholarly sources. Oh, very different from smutty books.
Yeah, that is pretty
smutty
different.
Books are not scholarly sources.
Maybe you could create an entire genre, which is actually like...
smutty scholarly sources?
Well, I was going to say smutty books based on scholarly sources. So everything in them is actually like correct, but it's also very, very dirty.
It sounds like fun, but ultimately I feel like my credibility would be questioned. Also, I'm gonna guess it's gonna be hard to get peer-reviewed articles when I'm just throwing smut in there. Also, I'm not a very good writer. I'm a reader, not a writer. I'm a lover,
Kara?
Not a fighter.
We're calling upon you for scholarly sources based smut.
I'm sure that that's exactly what Kara wants to do, is read my
No, she'll write it and then you can read it.
I don't think she wants to do that either. I shouldn't speak for her, but I'm just going to guess.
You let us know.
Perchance a guess. All right.
She's a writer.
So in the early 19th century, the issue of Bibas, which had been dismissed a while ago as like outdated superstition, was raised again by the emerging science of psychoanalysis.
Okay.
So it's pretty easy to see just from the stories I've told that Bibas were used to cover up cases of sexual assault or rape.
Yep.
And there are also some less sad and like sinister explanations for the popularity of these creatures. The sleeping disorder, sleep paralysis. So this was a lot of times probably related to sleep paralysis. It can mimic all the signs of a Bibas encounter. Scientists estimate that 60% of people will experience sleep paralysis at least once in their life, which could explain why incubus attacks were so common throughout history, especially before they had the science to back up what was really happening. And as we all know, not all sleep paralysis involves sex-crazed gargoyle-faced demons, but some does. And they refer to this part of sleep paralysis as the incubus phenomenon.
Interesting.
I found journal articles about the incubus phenomenon. According to November 22 issue of Front Psychiatry, phenomenologically, the incubus phenomenon is characterized by a sensation of pressure on the chest that is accompanied by sleep paralysis and compound hallucinoid experiences involving a creature positioning itself on the thorax, exerting pressure, and carrying out aggressive and or sexual acts.
That sounds extremely scary.
In a meta-analysis, which was published in November of 2016 in the Journal of Frontiers in Psychiatry, the research looked at 13 studies of the incubus phenomenon that included nearly 1,800 people. The different studies came from countries including Canada, U.S., China, Japan, Italy, and Mexico. The researchers found that over 1 in 10 people, or 11% of the general population, will experience the incubus phenomenon in their lifetimes. Dr. Jan Dirk Blom, a professor of clinical psychopathology at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, said, "That means there is an 11% chance for any given individual to experience the incubus phenomenon at least once during their lives. But in certain groups, the odds of encountering an incubus are higher. Among people with psychiatric disorders, as well as among refugees and, surprisingly, students, the odds of experiencing the phenomenon are as high as 41%.
Wow.
And it seemed from what I was gathering while reading these is that stress is a high factor, hence refugees,
trauma,
students,
and
then psychiatric disorders. The analysis also found that people sleeping on their backs are more likely to experience it, because the logic being that you're more likely to imagine something sitting on your chest if you're not laying on your chest.
Yep. Glad to be a side sleeper. Proud side sleeper right here.
Alcohol consumption and, unfortunately for you, irregular sleeping patterns also make an incubus visit more probable.
It's okay, because I'm a side sleeper.
Though the scary-ass experience of getting an incubus attack is frequently dismissed as just a bad dream, Dr. Blom noted that the incubus phenomenon can lead to additional problems, including anxiety, additional difficulty sleeping due to fear, and even delusional disorder, a mental illness that's akin to schizophrenia.
Yeah.
In the paper, researchers speculated that there was a possible link between incubus phenomenon and sudden unexpected death syndrome, which is, it's a thing where a healthy person inexplicably dies in their sleep.
Oh.
Like, everybody thinks that SIDS is just a thing.
Right.
But it can happen. It's less common, but it can happen to adults.
Oh.
Quote, "People who have experienced the incubus phenomenon often report a level of anxiety that is off the scale. Many of them have the feeling that they will actually die during an attack. Whether that ever happens is unknown. Even though this person is experiencing it, it is not hard to imagine this happening." Unquote. That's what Blom said.
Yeah, it's scary as fuck.
So you pretty much the idea being like you're scared to death in your sleep, but it looks like you just die in your sleep.
That is awful.
Yeah. The analysis also found that the form of the incubus figure and how people react to it can vary based on a person's cultural background.
Mm-hmm.
For example, she said, patients with a Muslim background often tell me that they see an incubus phenomenon as proof that they are being haunted by a jinn, which is an invisible spirit created by Allah out of smokeless fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes, however, the incubus doesn't, it doesn't always have to be scary because according to Blom, I recently spoke to a healthy 15-year-old girl who experienced the incubus phenomenon, and she found four miniature penguins dining at a table on her chest and had been thrilled and amused rather than scared. So if that reassures y'all at all,
you could,
it might not be a demon. You could just see four penguins having dinner on your chest, you know?
Okay.
So you, I imagine you still get the feeling of pressure and you can't move because you're in sleep paralysis, but you're like, all right, well, penguins, have some tea.
Penguins are like pretty heavy. I assume even like little ones are pretty dense.
Oh, yeah. They seem like a dense bird for sure.
That's why they can't fly. Too dense.
I found an article from Industrial Psychiatry Journal, Volume 27, released in 2018, titled Unusual Cases of Succubus, a Cultural Phenomenon Manifesting as Part of Psychopathology. And they discussed two cases where people who were diagnosed with schizophrenia reported the incubus phenomenon as part of their psychopathology and discussed the phenomenon of the succubus. In the first case, an 18-year-old male from a middle-class family with no history of mental illness presented with a continuous onset of schizophrenia over 3 years, characterized by delusions of persecution, reference, grandiosity, control, and auditory hallucinations of commanding and disgusting type. In addition to the symptoms listed, he elaborated that he often felt someone having sexual intercourse with him against his will.
Okay.
So he was, when he was discussing this with his therapist, he was very distraught. It was not a consensual thing. And like he would go through and describe these things in detail. He had a strong belief that a witch was doing so, but could not point out the figure of a witch. And they did point out that his cognitive functions were intact. And he did not seem to have very good insight as to what was happening, but he did genuinely, it wasn't like he was making stuff up.
Okay.
In this case study, they found no history of narcolepsy, insomnia, hypersomnia, sleep tremors, nightmares, or sleep paralysis, or any other sleep-related disorders that they could associate with this. Based on all of that, they diagnosed him with schizophrenia, and he was started on medication, and apparently the issues resolved.
Thank goodness.
There was a second case involving a 24-year-old male who described pretty much the same situation. He was having hallucinations, both auditory and visual in that case. And going over this over a series of years, they ended up medicating him and the issues seemed to resolve themselves. In both of these cases, they determined that the thought of a succubus was due to cultural beliefs. And they use this study to talk about how cultural influences affect those diagnosed with mental health concerns. They describe it in a lot of detail, and if anybody's interested in reading it, I will have it posted on our sources page, but it was more detail than I wanted to go into in the actual episode.
Legit, yeah.
Due to all of these symptoms, this massively affected their lives. Like, one person was currently, like, in college, and he had to discontinue his education, and he lost his job. And by medicating it, they were able to get everything back under control. If you're somebody that's more on the believing side and you're like, I get it, you're providing me with all of these stories, but I don't believe it. There is a lot of people who still believe that it's more than mental health or sleep disorders. So you're not alone.
I could see, and you're probably going to say this, but the people with mental health issues tend to be the ones who are more susceptible for these kind of evil presences to attach to them.
Oh,
yeah. Which is why, once they got help, believing that they're real, like, yeah.
And you can find evidence online of people still believing this. 8 months ago on the Christian subreddit, a user posted, I think I've had an encounter with an incubus and I need help. Hello, I have never posted to Reddit before, but I'm hoping to connect with some people who can hopefully help me with a serious matter and possibly offer an explanation. Some very strange things have been happening to me, but most recently I, 22 female, Have been having some sexually suggestive dreams that are very graphic and detailed. I have some questions for anyone that is knowledgeable about incubus demons. I first need help with how I can rid myself of the harassment and torture, but I'm also wondering if it is possible for another living human being to summon such demons into my life, or is this something that I may have invited unbeknownst to me? Please respond if there's anyone reading this with information. And this subreddit takes this stuff seriously. One user posted in response, demons are a tricky subject since most come from speculation, interpretation, or experience. All of these have a plethora of backings. I personally have noticed that demons have common characteristics of being evil spirits, any spirit in rebellion to God. These specific classifications for demons are still unknown, but also unnecessary. To search for demons would mean to invite them into the view of our lives, which causes unnecessary strife. As suggested before, please seek God, seek help from the church, rebuke all evil spirits by the authority of God bestowed upon us and his children. My personal story from this is one time seeing a succubus on my bed. I was going through a hard time, sexually speaking, but I sought God fervently and continuously until I realized I was free and I continue to live in that freedom he gave me, he with a capital H. So please go to God first. So this post has 54 comments, and most of them were people being genuinely supportive and helpful, sometimes offering their similar experiences and saying what they did to help. So it's not like everybody's writing this off as a like attention-seeking or just like a made-up story.
Right.
I also found an article by Richard Gallagher in the Washington Post titled, "As a Psychiatrist, I Diagnose Mental Illness. Also, I Help Spot Demonic Possession. How a Scientist Learned to Work with Exorcists."
Interesting.
And in the article, Gallagher goes on to describe how for the past 2.5 decades and over several hundred consultations, he helped clergy from multiple denominations and faiths to filter episodes of mental illness, which represented the majority of the cases. He said overwhelming majority. So a lot of times it was somebody in a mental health crisis. But there were times where they described it as the devil's work. He said, "It's an unlikely role for an academic physician, but I don't see these two aspects of my career in conflict. The same habits that shape what I do as a professor and a psychiatrist, open-mindedness, respect for evidence, and compassion for suffering people, led me to aid in the work of discerning attacks by what I believe are evil spirits and, just as critically, differentiating these extreme rare events from medical conditions." Unquote. So while it might seem very cut and dry, and we might just want to say, okay, back in the day they didn't have an explanation, now we do.
Right.
There are people out there, like educated psychiatrists, who are like, well, there's not always an explanation. So there may still be some sort of cryptid / demon / spirit out there that is affecting people and that they still encounter to this day. And that is the story of Bibus / incubus / succubus / incubi / succubi.
Wow. I loved that because I thought you were just going to go, this is an incubus. This is what it entails. This is a succubus. This is what it entails. And you just went all over the place with that. I loved it.
It felt a lot like the basic outline of starting to write a college paper again.
That is what it sounded like.
So, on a skeptic scale of para to normal, para being 5, normal being 1, what are you going to give a Bibus? It's a difficult one. I'm still going back and forth on it in my head.
I'm going to give it a 3 because I can't decide. I think a lot of times it's probably mental health concerns.
Yep.
I think that if there is some sort of a spirit that is attacking people, especially because the descriptions of what they are vary so much, mm-hmm. that maybe it's not one kind of being, but rather that's just the name that we give beings who act like it.
Okay. Yep. That exact reason that you're describing is why I was going to give it a 2.
Yeah.
I'm not writing it off, but I do think that the majority of the cases are probably scientifically explained.
Right.
And the ones that aren't, I don't know that it's necessarily a Bibus situation. It's probably something else. But then, as we know, many different spirits can present themselves many different ways. So.
Right.
There's just too much unknown.
There's too much unknown.
Believe it? Ripley's Believe It or Not. Believe it or not. Brittany, what do you got for me this week?
Girl. I had such a hard time trying to figure out my topic this week.
What? Really? You have like a list of potentials.
No, okay. So I wanted it to be something sexy.
Because of 69.
Because I know how much episode 69 and what 69 mean to you.
They do.
And because of that, I let you pick your topic first, which was potentially going to be my topic, but I wanted you to have it.
Oh, you didn't tell me that.
So then I was like, well, what the fuck am I going to do now? So I Googled sexy ghosts.
Okay.
And got a bunch of articles of spectrophilia, which you already did.
Yeah.
And then I changed the way that I worded it, much to the potential detriment to myself and what my search history and my algorithms.
Oh, your poor algorithms.
So, and it was still all like having sex with ghosts or sexy times with incubi and succubi. So then I Googled sexy cryptids.
Oh, ooh.
Which led to a bunch of sexy cryptid sticker Etsy shops.
There are so many of them.
So there is a big market for sexy cryptid sticker Etsy shops.
There's a big market for sexy cryptid books, sexy cryptid audiobooks, sexy, like, people are really into this whole, tentacles and claws and things.
So then I found a cryptid-based erotica, which I sent you the link for.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it.
It's a book by Honey Cummings called The Erotic Cryptid Collection. Wow. And the overview of which says, there are things that go bump in the night and slither between the sheets.
That's my slithering between the sheets sound.
Are they like silk sheets? Is that why it's so smooth?
Yes. Yeah, because if it was cotton, it'd be more like...
I'm glad you have your slithering sheet selection.
You know, there are things we've had to ponder in our lives, and I know who I am and what I'm about.
So the description for this book, to continue on, to anyone who is also curious about the erotic cryptid collection, says, cryptids are thought to be beings of folklore crafted to explain the unexplainable. Sasquatch, the Chupacabra, and the New Jersey Devil have become part of the collective unconscious and are responsible for thousands, millions of nightmares. But sometimes the most frightening thing is exciting.
Okay, so people have nightmares. People have dreams. People have wet dreams. Does that mean you can have a wet nightmare?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Well, because as the book goes... Join Frankie, Claire, and Abigail as they explore what it means to be afraid and titillated.
Titillated's a good word.
For Frankie, that means helping a Sasquatch shapeshifter escape his furry form. Clara sets fire to her own life and ignites a new fire in Chupacabra's loins.
Mm-hmm.
And Abigail loses it all but seduces a devil at the roulette table. Honey Cummings offers three tales that will make you tingle. In every conceivable way.
Here for it.
The listeners couldn't hear, or, well, they couldn't see my slow shimmy that I just did at you with each word that I said.
You missed out, y'all. You missed out.
I will say, though, that this book has 4.4 out of 5 stars on BarnesandNoble.com.
That is insane for a cryptid smut book. That is an insane rating.
It's out of 5 reviews. Which isn't that many, but still. Let us know how it is after you read it.
Wow. I can't wait.
Well, then I found a couple of listicles ranking the sexiest cryptids.
Okay.
And while most of the internet seems to agree that by far the sexiest cryptid...
Mothman.
...is Mothman...
Because of that ass...
He's got a great ass.
Yeah.
Apparently, all of the listicle writers, though, got together and decided that when ranked, it's actually Nessie, a.k.a. the Loch Ness Monster, who is the sexiest.
That's a Leopleurodon, Charlie. A magical Leopleurodon.
Which, like, is bananas.
That is bananas.
And I think we can all agree on that. Like, yeah. Why is Nessie the sexiest of all the cryptids?
I don't.
It's clearly Mothman.
obviously. Maybe like a quick follow-up of Sasquatch, like close behind Mothman, but not Nessie. No.
Right?
No.
Right.
I'm disagreeing with these listicles.
But websites like thehardtimes.net says of Nessie, quote, "Oh, Nessie, you never forget your first crush. The first time I laid eyes on that phallic shadow of a neck emerging from the still waters of Loch Ness, something awakened in me. I don't understand what I was feeling. I just knew I wanted to be near that magnificent creature," unquote.
You know, I really can't judge because I did have a crush on Roach from People Under the Stairs. So you know what? What? I'm not going to yuck your yum, y'all. If Nessie's what does it for you, more power to you.
I don't understand either of them. But okay. But also, this website, out of 50 sexy cryptids, they named Mothman number 34.
The audacity.
Their excuse.
Harry Potter and the audacity of this bitch.
For real. Their excuse, quote, "I already know I'm going to catch some flack for putting Mothman so low on the list of cryptids that I would like to have sex with." Correct, sir. They go on to say, I get it. 7 feet tall with enormous wings and glowing red eyes. He's a hottie.
Obviously.
I just can't hear the name Mothman and not think about Richard Gere. It's a mood killer. It's not you, Mothman. It's me. Okay? Unquote.
Really? Because lots of people find Richard Gere dreamy. I thought he was pretty dreamy and pretty woman.
I don't think that he is the antithesis of dreamy enough to rank Mothman so low.
Exactly. Yep. I'm here for it. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Either way, though, I guess it doesn't matter because I've already covered both. The Loch Ness Monster in episode 64 and Mothman in episode 74.
Yeah. Wah,
exactly 10 episodes apart. So then I was like, well, what do I do now? I still don't have a topic.
Oh, so we're still not on the topic yet. No. Okay. All right.
No. So I was like, if Nessie is number one, then maybe a different lake monster would be an okay substitute.
Absolutely.
So I was looking up different lake monsters, and there are a lot. And
Tons.
I've covered several of them. And then I came across Cadborosaurus. And I thought, well, you know, on this list, they're ranked number 40 of the hard times. 50 cryptids ranked by their undeniable, indisputable, jaw-dropping sex appeal.
Okay.
So that was the name of the article.
This is number 40 out of 50? That yes. You were the, what we'd call the Cadbury Eggsaurus?
Cadborosaurus.
Okay, Cadborosaurus.
Quote, this is what they said of the Cadborosaurus. Specimens of this giant water snake / seahorse hybrid have allegedly been captured live twice, but both times it was released back into the water. Sounds like a pretty checkered dating history. No thanks. Unquote.
Oh, Jesus.
And its nickname is Caddy, which sounds like daddy, and that's why I picked it for you.
Yes, Caddy, yes.
And that is the entire description leading up to why I'm doing the Cadborosaurus.
I'm ready for it.
So the Cadborosaurus, a.k.a. Caddy, is an alleged sea serpent from the Pacific coast of North America. Its name is derived from Cadboro Bay in Greater Victoria, British Columbia, and the Greek root word saurus, meaning lizard or reptile.
So many sauruses in the world.
Caddy is described as a long, serpent-like beast with flippers, a long, hairy neck, and a horse or camel-like head, and it could be anywhere between 40 to 70 feet long. There have been over 300 claimed sightings since the 1930s, though some researchers have claimed to have found documentation of sightings dating back to 1791.
Okay.
The history of the Cadborosaurus rose in popularity when Victoria Daily Times editor and journalist Archie H. Wills began writing about the creature, whose moniker was first suggested in a letter written to the newspaper by I. Vaston in 1933. The name stuck, and the serpent's official name became the Cadborosaurus, sometimes shortened to Caddy. And Wills became the unofficial Caddy expert, being the person to report the eyewitness accounts of the creature. Of them, these eyewitness accounts. They include the first reported sighting, which took place in 1933 by lawyer and clerk of the legislature, W.H. Langley, and his wife. They were out on their yacht when they claimed to have seen what they described as a horrible serpent with the head of a camel.
I'm just trying to picture that.
It's not pretty.
No, it's not pretty in my head either.
All the sketches of it, which, and I mean, I get it. It's a camel. But it was giving off Joe Camel vibes.
It's hard to take anything seriously. It really was.
It was like a snake with Joe Camel's head. And that is how they described it.
I don't think I like that. Did it have a cigarette in its mouth?
No.
Okay.
But most of them were of the creature dead.
Well, and you know what? Cigarettes are hard to keep lit when you swim in the ocean.
You know, also maybe that's why he died. Smoked too many cigarettes. Yeah, yeah. Another sighting just a year later in 1934 was reported by two members of the provincial government who gave a similar, if not the same, description as the one in 1933. Quote, the high reputation of these gentlemen in Victoria made their reports impressive, and they were believed by thousands. The newspaper, The Province, reported, the phenomenon is not likely handled like the usual sea serpent story of the silly season, but rather as an important scientific discovery, unquote.
The silly season.
The silly, you know, I don't, Canada.
I don't know. I just appeared on the news in a chicken suit today, so I suppose I can't talk about what would be the silly season of news.
You know. Duluth is a weird place. Canada is also a weird place. The silly season. Later that same year, two fishermen reported seeing two sea creatures in the bay. One was about 60 feet long, while the other one was about half that size. Like a little mom and a little baby.
So we're thinking there's multiple catasauruses.
Yeah.
All right.
Cute.
I just realized I call it a cat. I know it's a cadborosaurus, but I'm stuck on the catty part.
You know, we all know what you mean. You can call it a cadborosaurus. You can call it a Cadbury agasaurus. You can call it a cattysaurus.
We know what we're saying.
Two hunters alleged to have seen catty while trying to retrieve a duck that they had shot. They claimed that the monster rose out of the water, swallowed the duck, snapped at some gulls, and then submerged. They noted the 6-foot-long head with saw-like teeth.
Is this like the fisherman story of like the fish was this big, the duck was this big, but then this giant lake monster came out and ate it? So we didn't get to show you because the lake monster ate it. But we totally did get that duck.
It was ginormous. It was clucking big. Ducks don't cluck.
Quacking.
It was quacking.
You're already in homegrown zone.
It was quackadicorous. I don't know. I got nothing. And according to an article in the Vancouver Sun on February 12, 1937, a sea monster appeared in the waters off Bowen Island. Quote, it was reddish brown, about 18 feet long, with a head like a polar bear.
So that could just mean a long snout.
Yeah. Reported Fred Wilson, who was fishing in Snug Cove with his wife. Getting all snuggly.
You know, in a lot of cryptid descriptions, we hear somebody's like, this had a head of a goat. No, it was the head of a horse. No, when people are freaked out and it's dark and these other things are happening, you know, you just pick an animal. It's kind of like that. So even though we're like, I know that a polar bear looks nothing like a camel, looks nothing like a horse. At that time, you know, you just go with what you got.
I guess mostly they compare it to a horse or a camel, which kind of, they're shaped the same. The polar bear thing is a little weird, though.
Yeah, legit.
But also, this is Canada. Like, maybe they're just like, polar bears? I don't know. There was a long bony structure above the eyes, but there appeared to be no hair on the body. So it was a bald polar bear?
That's terrifying.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. It was feeding near the shore, and when its head and tail were submerged, it looked like a cedar log. Why would they say polar bear and not just a regular bear if it had no fur?
I was literally just thinking the same thing, and I'm not coming up with anything.
Right? All right. In October of 1937, folks at the Maiden Harbor Whaling Station in Vancouver got a bit of a surprise when they were removing the stomach contents from a sperm whale, and they came across a 20-foot-long carcass of an unidentified creature. It had the head of a horse, a snake-like body, and a finned spiny tail. And while a photograph had been taken of the creature, no one knows exactly what happened to its remains. No scientists have been able to properly identify the creature in the photograph, which seems to have mammalian and reptilian traits. It is suggested that the creature is a zeuglodon.
Okay.
Something like that. Otherwise known as a basalosaurus, which is a kind of large predatory prehistoric whale from about 33.9 million years ago. But apparently that explanation isn't 100% satisfactory, as a creature found in the sperm whale is much slimmer, mm-hmm. and the head isn't shaped right. You can now refer to image number one.
Gross. I know that you're going to edit that out, so I need everybody to understand that there was a significant pause before I said gross. It's not an attractive looking creature. I mean, I grant it's half decomposed from being in the stomach of a
sperm whale,
but still gross.
Oh, see, I got something sexy in there. Sperm whale.
I'm sorry when you're editing that. Sorry. Oh my God. Yep, that's what's sexy about this. Sperm whale.
You talked about sperm. Yeah. I talked about sperm. Two totally different kinds of sperm. You get it.
I get it. No, I'm here for
anyway, it. Anyway, per cryptidsfandom.com, the perhaps closest sighting of Caddy was described by Captain Paul Sowerberry.
Cool name.
Except for that's not his name.
Oh.
Sowerby?
Let's go with Sowerberry. It sounds like a candy.
In 1939.
Old Sowerberry, yeah.
Ye old Captain Sowerberry. He said, quote, okay, first of all, every time I read this, I always say it in like what I consider an old sea captain voice.
I'm ready for
in
this.
In my head. I'm not sure I was going to translate through my mouth. But
give her a go, Popeye. Let's hear it.
We were heading north. And above. Yeah, yeah.
Are you ready, kids? Aye, aye, Captain. This episode of SpongeBob over here. No, I'm sorry. I'll take this very seriously. Let's go.
All right. We were heading north and about 30 miles offshore and saw this thing standing about 4 feet out of the water. So I headed over towards it and took a look at it. At first, I thought it looked like a polar bear with its ruffles of hair. This polar bear has hair.
Okay.
The other one was bald.
Okay.
I have had zero substances.
No, I'm ready for this. Let's go, baby.
When we got right up alongside of it, the water was crystal clear, and there was just this column of this thing going down at least 40 feet and huge eyes. I had an old Newfoundland as a mate, and he said, "Do you see the eyes on him?" Sorry. "Do you see the eyes on him? Mouth and nose, I have no recollection of it at all. Just those great big eyes. And the eyes seem to open from the top to bottom." Unquote.
Oh, who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants. I don't even like SpongeBob, but that is the sea captain voice.
I'm here for it. So basically the creepiest thing about this was its eyes.
Yes.
It did have a polar bear head, but this polar bear had fur.
Which is less upsetting than the naked polar bear.
Well, have you ever, you know that a polar bear is not white. Its fur is white. I think its skin is like black or dark brown.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how would they
know? So how would they differentiate it between that and just a bear?
Right. How would they know? 14 years later, on February 13th, Valentine's Day, 1953, 10 people reported to have seen Caddy all in one day.
Okay.
All from different vantage points, and none of their descriptions contradicted each other.
Okay.
I did like a little mic drop, like look at Kayla in that one. I'm like, boom.
That's a lot of people with no variations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In August of 1968, a former whaler named William Hagland claimed to have caught a baby Cadborosaurus near De Courcy Island.
Turns out it's just an eel.
He described it as a small eel-like sea creature swimming along with its head completely out of the water, and that the undulation of its long, slender body caused portions of its spine to break the surface.
Now there's a sexy topic for you.
Undulation?
Undulation.
William had been out fishing with his two sons and his dad when they spotted the creature. Wanting to take a closer look, he and his son took out the dinghy, where his son was steering it, and William scooped it up in a net. In a 2011 article in the Journal of Scientific Exploration, William describes his first up-close look at the creature as, quote, "Under the bright lights aboard the sloop, we examined our catch and found that he was approximately 16 inches long and just over an inch in diameter. His lower jaw had a set of sharp, tiny teeth, and his back was protected by plate-like scales, while his underside was covered in a soft yellow fuzz."
Okay, that's a new element of the description.
Right? A small pair of flipper-like feet protruded from his shoulder area, and a spade-shaped tail proved to be two tiny flipper-like fins that overlapped each other.
Okay.
Unquote. And while he first thought that it might be some sort of a water snake, upon closer inspection, he couldn't figure out what it was. So he decided that he would take it to the biologist at the Department Bay to examine. Since it was nighttime and they were without any sort of like a radio to call ahead to ask them, like, describe it and have them tell him what it was, he figured that they would just set sail in the morning with the creature. So they filled a bucket with seawater and they dumped the creature into it. Then they went to bed early with a plan of leaving at first light.
I love it's like when you were little and caught bugs and you're like, I'll just stick this twig and a leaf in here to simulate its environment. It'll be fine.
It'll be totally fine. Well, William was not able to sleep. Quote, "We retired early, for I intended to leave at first light, but sleep would not come to me. Instead, I lay awake, acutely aware that the little creature trapped in our bucket. In the stillness of the anchorage, I could hear the splashes made by his tail and the scratching of his teeth and flippers as he attempted to grasp the smooth surface of the bucket. Such exertion, I began to realize, could cause him to perish before morning." Unquote. William ended up getting out of bed to check on the creature. He, quote, "shone my flashlight into the bucket. He stopped swimming immediately and faced the light as though it were an enemy. His mouth opened slightly, the lips drawn back to expose his teeth, and the tufts of whiskers standing stiffly out from each side of his snout, while his large eyes reflected the glare of my flashlight. I felt a strong compassion for that little face staring up at me, so bravely awaiting his fate." That is really scary. I'm taking a picture of that. We'll put that on social media.
Great. That's what I can.
Kayla's impersonation.
Of a caddy.
Of a caddy. William decided that if this really was such a rare creature, then it would be a miracle. And he should just let it go. Because it shouldn't just die in a bucket. Mm-hmm. Like, if it is this magical, miracle, cool creature, and it dies in the bucket, it's going to be forgotten. Whereas it could live on to be seen by other people. And, you know, see where life takes the little guy.
See where life goes.
Yeah, so that's just what he did. He lowered the bucket over the side and watched it swim away. Now, some folks think that this didn't happen because, well, he let the thing go, so there was no proof.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think that if it did, I think William did the right thing.
I'm more stuck on the, like, okay, you described this creature like it had terrifying eyes and big teeth, and it was going like,
meh. Well, no, he's a little teeth. It's just a little guy.
And they're going to, meh. And meh. You're like, oh, I felt compassion. I'm like, nah, I'd be like, put the lid back on the bucket.
Well, he didn't want it to die.
Science.
In 1991, another person by the name of Phyllis Harsh claimed to have caught another baby catty that was about 2 feet in length. They also returned the little baby catty to the water. So this obviously is just to name a few of the times that people mm-hmm. have claimed to have seen and or caught the Cadborosaurus. So if not a sea serpent, what could the Cadborosaurus be? Well, four instances when folks thought that they were seeing a catty, but were then proven wrong.
Okay.
In 1943, two officers, Inspector Robert Owens and Staff Sergeant Jack Russell, saw a huge sea serpent with a horse-like head in Georgia Strait. Later, quote, "With a pair of binoculars, Sergeant Russell saw that the strange apparition was a huge bull sea lion leading a herd of 6 sea lions. Their undulation..."
Undulation!
A lot of undulating in this story. See, it is sexy. "Their undulations as they swam appeared to form a continuous body, with parts showing at intervals as they surfaced and dived. To the naked eye, the sight perfectly impersonated a sea monster. Some think that the catty is just a giant oar fish. Per Wikipedia, this species can reach 17 meters or 56 feet in length.
Mm-hmm.
And can weigh up to 660 pounds.
I've actually looked into oarfish before. And yeah, creepy. Because I like to look at things that could exist in giant bodies of water and freak myself out from ever wanting to go in those giant bodies of water. This story is not helping.
It's not, no. They're long and silvery and they undulate,
mm-hmm.
like a serpent would say, as they swim through the water, says H.J. Walker, a senior museum scientist at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. And that's where you get to look at photo number 2, because that is an oarfish, and that is fucking gross. And that is apparently a baby oarfish.
Yeah, that's not even that long.
No.
Still wouldn't want to encounter it.
No. No, I wouldn't either. As well as from the accounts that I read, there seems to be the most common explanation for catty is a basking shark. Quote, "The carcass of a decomposing basking shark is often mistaken for catty and has fooled experts and laymen. A rotting basking shark may also resemble a decomposing plesiosaur."
Oh, and you know what? I was thinking, I just had to Google it just to make sure. And yes, a basking shark is what I thought it was. It's the one with the big ass mouth that just goes in and eats krill. It's not dangerous. It's a shark, but it just goes through and it like filters the.
Yeah, the, like, it really krill. Just swims through fish with its mouth open.
Yep,
like
exactly.
A whale.
Exactly. Like a whale shark does too, I believe.
Darren Naish, a British paleontologist, and his colleagues have proposed that the baby Cadborosaurus captured in 1968 by William Hoagland was actually really a pipefish. So while there are definitely naysayers who believe that catty is simply a myth, the story of the Cadborosaurus has moved beyond just local legend. Cadborosauruses have been featured on the television documentary series Northern Mysteries, as well as mentioned on an episode of Is It Real? Called Monsters of the Deep. Catty was a mysterious element featured in the 9th Nancy Drew computer game produced by Her Interactive, Danger on Deception Island, set on the west coast of the United States.
Okay.
And the Cadborosaurus appears in the Zoo Typhoon 2 mod Paranoia Reborn, which I think is a kind of video game.
Can I read the sentence?
Yeah.
It'll make more sense to me if I read the sentence. Okay, yes, Zoo Tycoon 2 is a game. Zoo Tycoon is like a roller coaster tycoon. You could create your own thing. So in that, you could create your own zoo. And so a mod is a modification of that game that came out that people released. So they're saying like in that mod, you can have the catty.
The catty.
And because like Left 4 Dead.
Oh yeah, they
has
did the
mod
one.
Left 4 Duluth that you can
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
So that's what that means.
Okay. I'm glad because I didn't know that. hashtag pop culture references.
Yes.
And that, my friends, is the Cadborosaurus, a.k.a. Caddy, the sea monster.
All right.
From Canada.
Canada.
And the United States. That area.
All right. On the skeptic scale, I'm going to give this a... I'm going to give it a 3 because I do think it is absolutely believable.
Right.
But I don't know that I would describe it as paranormal. So we're just going to go right down the middle and do a 3.
I agree. It's just like with the whole Nessie thing.
Yeah.
Like super I believe Nessie probably does exist, but I believe it's a plesiosaur.
It's super believable, super probable. And especially like you were describing how many people have seen it and how many people saw it at the same time with the same descriptions. I just don't know that it's necessarily paranormal, but I'm not willing to write it off as not paranormal because there's not enough evidence scientifically otherwise.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, threes.
Yeah.
Yeah, threes.
Yeah, threes.
Caddy.
Threes. Caddy, threes. Yes, Caddy, yes.
Yes, Caddy, yes.
All right. Well, hey, we're not going to keep you for any longer because it's fucking...
Homegrown.
Homegrown time. And if it's not homegrown where you are, I'm sure you got shit to do. But, you know, even if you do have some time and you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share with us, a ghostie you've seen, an alien, a cryptid, a caddy, you know, if you could send those stories into us, we'd super duper appreciate it. You can send us your paranormal experience by emailing us directly, leftofskeptic@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, and click the Listener Stories tab at the top of our page. You can get to our website by using the link tree in our bio. You can choose to remain anonymous or include your name, whatever you'd prefer. We just ask that you please include your pronouns.
You can also follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Left of Skeptic, and Facebook at Left of Skeptic Podcast.
By the way, Mom... because you're still listening. I know you are. Mom, I have not forgotten, and I will cover your birthday subject next episode.
Ooh.
So she had a specific birthday request, but I had to wait till all the homegrown stuff was done.
Yep. And episode 169.
Yes. But Mom, next week, it will be here. I promise. And I hope you're healing really well because my mom just had hip surgery.
No.
No, good. It's good. We've been waiting for it.
Yay.
It's like your sludgy surgery. We've been waiting for it.
Good. So. Okay. I hope you feel significantly better.
Well, happy Spooky Wednesday, everybody.
Happy Spooky Wednesday.
Thank you for listening. We love you and appreciate you.
It's true. We do.
Okay.
Bye.
The Left of Skeptic podcast is written and hosted by Kayla Moria and Brittany Lind. This week's episode is edited by me, Brittany Lind. The Left of Skeptic music is by Dave Melling and Emily Havoc, and our artwork is by Al LeBlanc. Okay, bye!
Crazy how the very first sin was a woman who ate. A woman who ate. She served and licked the plates. Crazy how the very first sin was a woman who ate. She chose her fate and she said no to heaven's gates. She's mother and mother fucking